Back together again, you and I chatting it up, wrapping up a busy week, Friday, December 20th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show looking at Governor Ned Lamont's reaction to a new state report on personal spending by leaders in the state colleges and universities system, including some questionable purchases on the credit card by the system's chancellor. Greenwich Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio updated us on a decision for now to keep Connecticut out of any multi-state offshore wind energy projects. CBS News Crime and Public Safety Unit Leader Anna Schechter detailed the latest ongoing developments in the killing of UnitedHealthcare's CEO in New York City. And a Sacred Heart University Assistant Professor of Communication Studies, Dr. Mark Congdon Jr., talked about recently meeting Pope Francis during a symposium in Rome.
You know, I guess it's tough not to be tone deaf sometimes in some of these things. And I mean, even people who are well-intentioned at trying to calm nerves and calm anxieties, sometimes they're just tone deaf, and I don't understand why. I don't get it. I don't understand why. So there's a story here in the Hearst papers, and again, this is like the next chapter in this spending by the university presidents. This has been a big story for 2 days now, because it's the kind of story that resonates with people who see people on a state level who are up there getting paid with tax money and who are up there running, you know, institutions of higher learning, and they get a little loosey-goosey, a little easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy, you know, with the state credit cards. And everybody's, you know, there's kind of outrage about this. There's kind of disgust. There's kind of shaking your head going, so stupid. How can you be so stupid? And I kind of understand what Governor Ned Lamont is trying to do here. I get it. I understand it. He's kind of, you know, trying to keep both sides happy here. But it just doesn't sound right, Governor. And I know you're listening. Hey, how is everybody, by the way? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Governor Ned Lamont on the pricey spending by Connecticut State College and University executives. Quote, a lot of it was small ball. Okay. Jacqueline Rabe Thomas' story, the subheadline, Lamont backs college system leaders who repeatedly use public funds inappropriately on pricey meals, dry cleaning, alcohol, and chauffeured rides. Now, what Lamont is saying here, where did he make these comments? He downplayed the findings at an unrelated news conference yesterday. So he commented on this, and I see what he's trying to do. But it ain't working, Governor. It's not working. He voiced his continued support for the system's current leadership, including those who the report found repeatedly used taxpayer and student tuition dollars inappropriately. He said, quote, here's the quote from Governor Ned Lamont. And again, I have no personal animus toward the guy, but sometimes he misfires on this stuff. Here's the quote. A lot of it was small ball. You know, some of the issues was an error of judgment. Lamont told reporters after an unrelated news conference Thursday. Okay, Governor, you can say that. Again, here's the quote from the governor. A lot of it was small ball. You know, some of the issues, it was an error of judgment. Well, okay, does that work with the IRS when we're filing our taxes? If you're off by, I don't know, some $60 steaks, or here and there, and you're off by a few grand, does the IRS, if you call the IRS and say, hey, you know what, a lot of this was small ball, you know, some issues, it was an error of judgment, does the IRS say that's okay? Now, to be fair, the governor is not saying it's okay. But I don't quite understand, especially from our leaders, and maybe I do, maybe this is all tongue-in-cheek, maybe this is rhetorical, but I don't quite understand the need to protect people that have screwed up. Now, maybe he's trying to play nice. Maybe they're like, hey, Governor, you know what? Try to keep both sides happy here. Make sure you're PO'd enough, but say it wasn't that big of a deal. Now, he also said later on, right after that, he said, quote, but that said, you still have to lead by example. Okay, I get it. But the thing is, the first part of what he said was unnecessary. He could have said, yes, I saw the report. I got what I heard from Comptroller Scanlon. I'm not happy about this. You need to lead by example. You don't have to come out there, and this is not just for Governor Lamont, but it's for any business leader, any politician. You don't have to justify anything. People don't want to hear that. Again, for those of you out there, for example, who are cashiers or were cashiers at one time, or you worked in a grocery store or a corner store, or if you were a bank teller and you were dealing with, you know, a certain amount of cash, you had to justify in the till at the end of the day. If you were off by 50, 100, 2,000, 3,000 bucks, would you have gone to your boss and said, well, it's not really all that much? You know, I understand, but I do have to lead by example. No. State Comptroller Sean Scanlon Wednesday released a special examination of the spending of top officials running the Connecticut State Colleges and Universities. That's all the state schools that are not UConn. The examination was ordered by Lamont, who was prompted to call for the review by a Connecticut insider investigation, particularly on the habits of CSU Chancellor Terrence Cheng, including expensing to the state $1,200 chauffeur rides despite being given a state car, and charging expensive meals that included $70 steaks with his staff and other officials in the Lamont administration. So the governor is playing, he's playing CYA, cover your R's here, governor. Don't do that. I'm telling you, governor, don't do that. Don't keep telling people, well, it's little stuff. You know what? To a lot of people, governor, with all due respect, sir, a $60 or $70 steak is not little stuff. Some of the people hearing this may say, boy, must be nice. Wouldn't the wife and I, or hubby and I, or my boyfriend or girlfriend, whatever, significant other, man, we'd like to go out for a couple of $60 chops. I don't get this. The Connecticut Insider also reported Cheng lives just over the Connecticut border in New York, a 90-minute drive without traffic from the office in Hartford. Despite his employment contract anticipating he would move to Connecticut full-time by giving him money to move here and a $2,100 monthly allowance for an official residence. Why are we covering for this guy? Who is he? The comptroller's report released Wednesday provided further detail of Cheng's spending and exposed that other college system leaders made, and this isn't my, folks, this is what the comptroller is saying here, Sean Scanlon, shocking and tone-deaf purchases of their own. So why is the governor out there protecting these people? It's maddening. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Now look, do we want to see people lose their jobs? No, not necessarily, especially if they're good at what they do. But I ask you a simple question. If you or I did this in a private company where we were traveling or expensing things and we were throwing, hey, boss, don't worry about it. It's a $60 steak. It's good meat. Yeah. Hey, I know you're paying me ostensibly to live in the state, but I'll take a $1,000 chauffeured ride. How long would we have our jobs? You know, the other worst thing that you can be, or along with this, being tone deaf in politics and public service is one thing. You know what? The tone deafness is bad enough. But the arrogance, too, and just the way that you have this little contrast now between the state comptroller, Sean Scanlon, in that report saying, hey, Mr. Cheng, the chancellor of the Connecticut State College and University System overspent. He went a little nuts with the credit card here to some pretty pricey stuff. And the other the university presidents did in the state college and university system. And now you contrast that with the way the Governor Lamont is kind of playing this off. And listen, it's not the end of the world. I understand that. It didn't cripple the system. I get that, but perception is reality for people. I say that all the time. Perception is reality. And to the common person who does not get chauffeur-driven rides to the common person who doesn't put dry cleaning on the company credit card, to the common person who doesn't pay Eversource and other bills of their staff members and students on a card. That doesn't click, Governor. I hate to tell you. Lamont said whether somebody overspent on dinners is irrelevant to what I'm going to do with that budget, meaning the budget for the state college and university system. I have to laugh at the way the writer of this story closed out that paragraph. Said Lamont, comma, a multimillionaire Democrat who lives in Greenwich. A little twist of the knife there. The chairman of the board, Martin Gay, promising during the Board of Regents' regular meeting on Thursday that the board and the system is working to make changes so the inappropriate spending outlined in the comptroller's audit doesn't happen again. Why do you have to make changes in that? See, one of the greatest phrases I ever heard in life, and it's so true. Think about this. This is a great phrase. And I've heard this coined by a few people. One of the best phrases I ever heard in life was, how do you define class? Class is doing the right thing when nobody's watching. Class is doing the right thing when nobody is watching. Terrence Chang also told the board that he's instructed his team to implement recommendations. To improve compliance and reporting over the next 100 days. Now, listen to this word salad that he puts out there. Listen, and again, I have no ill will against this guy. I've never met him. He could walk in the studio right now through the big studio door to my left here at Connoisseur, and I had no idea who it was except from pictures. Quote, even though they were taken on behalf of the system, I recognize that my intent did not match the impact and the perception, and that falls on me. That's my responsibility, and I will be held accountable for it, Chang said. So you mean to tell me you didn't know what was, and again, this is not a personal attack on somebody, I'm just saying, only now you realize that you did this stuff that you shouldn't have done? Do you really want us to believe that? Or, Mr. Chancellor, with all due respect, were you of the opinion that, well, yeah, it's they'll never see it, right? How many times was, yeah, just go ahead, put it on the card. They'll never see it. So that never occurred to you as you were driving back and forth from your home in suburban New York, even though you're supposed to be living in the state. Oh, this gets even better. I'm gonna cry reading this. It's clear that my judgment in several instances was lacking, and I'm going to do better. Oh, it was lacking. You couldn't say it was wrong. You couldn't say it's clear that I used bad judgment. It wasn't bad judgment. It wasn't wrong. It was lacking. Yes, it was lacking. I feel terribly that my actions have distracted from the great work that our faculty and staff are doing to support our students. Would you be feeling that way if you didn't get caught? And he wraps it up with, to me, that's one of the things I feel worst about, so I will tell you that I have learned from these mistakes. I will not make these mistakes again, but I keep my job at $400,000 a year. No, that's me saying that, not him. I mean, come on. Stop. Like I said, class is doing the right thing when nobody is looking. Couple of things on the energy front we need to talk about, and joining us on that topic, as he always does, Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio of Greenwich. Hey, Ryan, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm great. How are you?
Very, very good. Couple of things, Ryan. First of all, has the state now waved the white flag here on offshore wind? Because I see we're going to get involved in some solar farming. But what was said today, or what's the news on this, Ryan?
The news today is that Connecticut, for now, is not going to participate in an offshore wind purchase with any of our neighboring states. As you know, all year, I and some of my Republican colleagues have been urging the governor not to make a long-term offshore wind purchase at potentially $150 or $160 per megawatt hour. That's in comparison to the kind of competitive market rate for electricity, which is currently roughly $40. This would have raised Connecticut consumers' electric bills potentially by hundreds of dollars in the future when our rates are already so high. So we have been urging all year the governor to decline participating in this long-term purchase. Today, the administration announced they were not going to participate, and we're very glad that's happening. We need to pivot now to a long-term energy strategy that will actually drive down costs, reduce those public benefits charges, and make Connecticut affordable for everyone.
Yeah, so Ryan, it certainly sounds like the governor, being a businessman himself, probably heard the noise from you folks in the Republican Party, saw the controversies to the public benefits charge, and I think on this he made politically, economically, a sensible decision here.
Yeah, I think it was an economically sensible decision, absolutely. When you can buy something for $40, why buy it for $160? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sitting outside a gas station right now, and I filled up my tank, and it wasn't with $12 gasoline. But that's what we would have been doing if we purchased $160 wind. There is a better way to do this. I think the governor understood that this wasn't feasible economically or politically, and we're glad he made this decision not to purchase offshore wind, just like we're glad that earlier this year, at our urging as House and Senate Republicans, he decided not to go forward with an electric vehicle mandate for the state. We can't go the way of California and Connecticut. We got to charter our own path. We got to be smart. We got to cut costs for residents in this state.
Ryan, on another energy-related topic, a story over the past day or so, very good one on the Hartford Current. What is the governor's intransigence, Ryan, to filling out the two empty seats on PURA, the Public Utility Regulatory Authority? I mean, the answer he gave to the Current, saying, well, it's no magic bullet if you think, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, you probably saw the answer, two more seats aren't going to solve our problems. Ryan, and I'm kind of asking this rhetorically, I don't know whether you have the answer, what's wrong with getting more voices into a body whose decisions control tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in consumer spending? I don't understand his intransigence on that. Do you? Does anybody you know?
I don't, and I haven't, really fully fleshed it out with him. So I think you're going to have to ask him, but for your listeners, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority is the regulatory body that oversees all the utility rate setting. It's a very important body in this state. For several years, we've only had three members, even though the state law requires that the governor appoint five members. Mm-hmm. So there's five seats and only three have been filled. And, I'm old-fashioned. I think that those of us in government should follow the law, and the law says five people. So if you if you want to change the law and make it three, change the law and make it three, and let's have that discussion. But I think five, as long as it says five, we should fill five seats with, smart, energetic, fair-minded people who are going to protect consumers but are also going to create a stable investment climate so that we can harden our grid and ensure that there's reliability in the grid in the long term. I hope that there are new appointments that that deliver those types of candidates to PURA. I think we got to protect consumers, and we got to create a sustainable situation for our electric grid so the lights always turn on for everybody at all times. So,
yeah, and
I would recommend following the law.
Yeah, and finally on that, Ryan, we're seeing now, these, and you have a good background of this. I mean, the investment houses here, they don't want to extend credit to some of our utilities. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing here. Well, we need the credit first. Well, no, we're not going to give you the credit. Well, then we can't build out the infrastructure that everybody wants, because where's the money going to come from? So it's really kind of this vortex that we're caught in here for a while. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And listen, I don't think anyone's behaved perfectly in this. And, And I'll just say this, if there's downgrades, then that's going to cost consumers. Mm-hmm. It's going to probably reduce the long-term reliability of our grid. But, you know, those interest costs of borrowing are passed on to ratepayers by law, by federal law, not by state law. So we want a climate here that's fair and predictable, while we also have a regulatory environment that protects consumers from overcharging by the utility. So we can have both of those things. I think we can have both of those things, and that should be PURA's job, and that needs to be the administration's job to make it more likely. Again, we need lower costs, but we also need a predictable investment environment so we can make the necessary investments in our electric grid.
All right, Ryan Fazio. Ryan, thanks. Have a good week. Merry Christmas, happy holidays and all that. We'll talk to you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Merry Christmas.
All right, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Ryan Fazio there. All right, so what is the state now of that case? So we were shocked with a couple of weeks ago, caught on surveillance video, this, I don't know, self-appointed, some sort of white knight in his twisted way, taking down a healthcare company CEO in the middle of Manhattan. What is the situation with that case? And is it as open and shut as people think? Joining us right now is Anna Schechter. Anna is Crime and Public Safety Unit Leader in New York City for CBS News. Anna, good afternoon. It's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
Hey, Paul. It's great to be with you.
Thank you so much for the time. No, you're busy. And Anna, these cases to the common person, right? Oh, they got him. It's open and shut. Well, these cases, no matter how open and shut we tend to think, aren't usually that. I mean, this is going to go to trial. The jockeying has already begun here between the prosecutors and the lawyers here. So, Anna, let's start there. What is the status in the of the case right now in the continuing motion of the legal process here?
Sure. Well, there are actually two cases. So you have the federal case brought by the Southern District of New York. That's that murder charge, two stalking charges, and then the weapons charge. So with that, the maximum penalty, if the Department of Justice, it will likely be a Trump Department of Justice, if they seek the death penalty, the maximum sentence could be the death penalty. That's unlikely, but that could be on the table. So that's one case. Now, he's been arraigned, and yesterday his lawyer went to the federal judge and said, we showed up this morning thinking we were going to go to a different courthouse and come before a New York judge to face the Manhattan District Attorney's charges. And now here I am in federal court. What's going on? The feds are charging stalking-related charges, and then the Manhattan District Attorney is charging terrorism-related charges. So let's look at the District Attorney's case. He has not yet been arraigned. That arraignment hasn't been set. He's charged with first-degree murder, which is sort of a terrorism charge, second-degree murder as a crime of terrorism, and a whole host of other gun charges and the like. I think it might be that the feds came in and filed their charges in case District Attorney Bragg doesn't get a guilty conviction on that big first-degree terrorism charge. So you're going to have two trials. They're going to play out one after the other. There's been indication that the Manhattan DA's case will go to trial first, but it's all up in the air, and there has been a lot of jockeying and a lot of showmanship. I mean, you saw the helicopter and the airplane to get him down to Manhattan, to lower Manhattan, to show up in court. And the latest is he's detained in Brooklyn in federal prison. That's the latest.
Yeah, and Anna, does it seem like they're layering the charges on here? So this just may be, in the eyes of a jury, no matter what this guy said in whatever manifesto and his state of mind and health care, they are trying to elevate this, aren't they, above the usual. And I hate to say it that way, but I used to work in New York City a lot. Above the usual sort of quote-unquote garden variety, sadly, of shootings, which happen in New York and big city. Are they trying to elevate this legally?
Well, I think they are because of the evidence. Don't forget, he had a 300-word letter of sorts in which he essentially claims responsibility. He says to the feds, I acted alone. You can check. All the ATM withdrawals are my own. Nobody helped me. And he said, quote, these parasites had it coming. Look at the federal case, too. If you read the whole indictment, they lay out a timeline where in August, he homed in on an insurance company because it, quote, checks all the boxes. Mm-hmm. To make this grand statement that he wants. And by October, he was homing in on United Healthcare and Brian Thompson. So the premeditation, the crossing state lines, him lying in wait before pulling the trigger, and then also just the grandiosity of it. He had Monopoly money in his backpack. Who knows what kind of a spectacle he wanted to do with that. Mm-hmm. He was making a statement, and what prosecutors are saying is that he was trying to incite, Manhattan prosecutors saying he was trying to incite fear and terror amongst the civilian population.
Do either one of these cases, Anna, do these go to trial, or is he going to cop a plea, or is there any indication there or not?
Well, the only indication we have from his lawyer is what she said on cable news before she got hired, which is that she would see this play out as a guilty by reason of insanity on the defense side. And so we'll see if she sticks with that. And she said that because there is such a mountain of evidence. I think that they're going to be able to convince the jury that he was there and pulled the trigger, given the DNA and the fingerprints and the surveillance footage.
Yeah.
But the terrorism, I mean, that's sort of a harder sell to a jury.
And finally, Anna, you talked about his attorney. She is part of an attorney power couple, is she not? And her husband
is
on the Diddy defense team? Talk to me about that a little.
Her husband is the lead attorney representing Sean Diddy Combs. But guess what? Yesterday in federal court, who was flanking Mangione? It was his lawyer and her husband on either side. Those were the two people, along with an FBI special investigator who worked the case. Those were the three people in his corner. Nobody in his family showed up, but it was the husband-wife team. So it's a very interesting dynamic playing out in New York. And don't forget, she worked for 25 years in the very Manhattan District Attorney's office that is trying her client. And her husband, of course, has for a long time had this sort of high-powered firm.
Yeah.
Anna
Schechter, CBS News. Yeah, a lot of billable hours there. Anna, thank you. Have a happy weekend. We'll talk down the road. Thanks, Anna. Appreciate it.
You too. Thanks. My pleasure.
Thanks, Anna Schechter, CBS News Crime and Public Safety Unit Leader. And as we head toward the celebration of Christmas for millions of Catholics and Christians in general around the world, wanted to have this gentleman on because I got a note of this from Sacred Heart University. I said, this sounds interesting. Joining us right now, Sacred Heart University Assistant Professor of Communication Studies, Dr. Mark Congdon Jr., who met Pope Francis during a recent symposium in Rome, Italy. There was another Sacred Heart-affiliated person with him. And hey, Mark, it's Paul at WICC, just up the road. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So how does this work, Mark? I'd like to meet the Pope. Do you have an insight here? Or, but in all seriousness, how did this happen?
Yeah, so there was a global award for service learning, teaching, and research that a colleague of mine sent me and encouraged me to apply. And so I had applied last year or earlier in the year, and I ended up winning. And part of winning was getting the privilege and honor of being flown to Rome and meeting Pope Francis.
So let's step back here. What did you submit, or what was your project or your idea, Mark, that was able to get you this this award? What was it?
Yeah, it was a service learning project in my public relations and advertising classes, where we worked with on-campus and off-campus community partners around certain social justice issues each semester, connecting the curriculum to the community. And it was called Uniting Hearts. And so the project or the award, you had to describe the impact that the project had on students' learning and the broader community, and then go from there. And we went to – I was able to bring another student with me, Carisha Donaldson, and we got to meet Pope Francis.
So you get – now what happened? They call you, they send you an email or a text, and when you did this, Mark, did you think you had a chance to win this, or figured, hey, whatever happens, happen, A, and B, what was the what was your reaction when they told you you had won and you'd be making the trip?
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily expect to win because it's a global award and we were competing against all of the Catholic higher ed institutions in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And so, you know, you always hope that there's a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But when I received the email, I was actually teaching a class in Dingle, Ireland at our campus there.
Wow.
And I was ecstatic. I was just like in disbelief and very honored and humbled. And I was just ecstatic. And then just meeting Pope Francis, it really was an awesome and amazing opportunity. And his energy, his light, his aura was just beautiful. And his sermon that he gave was magnificent.
So talk about that. So you go over with this other student, and now the actual meeting happened where, in St. Peter's or in Vatican City? Talk about that, because I think that would fascinate people. And I have had some extended family members who, through certain circumstances, got to have a picture with a previous pope and shake his hand. But what is that experience like from where you go and the security and how close you are to a pontiff? Talk about that.
Yeah, so we met Pope Francis in Vatican City, and we had to go through security.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, it reminded me of like when I've been to like kind of like going through TSA a little bit.
Yeah,
get your bag checked and all that. And it wasn't just myself, but it was other faculty and students mm-hmm. from across the world who are also award winners. And this was a symposium. So we were there for multiple days and we got to hear about the other community engaged service learning projects, the other universities and students are working on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the students also met with Pope Francis. And so we all had a chance to go up and shake his hand and say a little something to him.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to describe the feeling. That was my first time in Italy.
Oh, good.
And the Vatican. And it was beautiful. The pictures don't do it justice.
You know, we're speaking with Dr. Mark Congdon from Sacred Heart University. He's an assistant professor of communication studies, and through an award he got to, along with another Sacred Heart person, meet and actually chat for a few seconds with Pope Francis. You know, one thing, Mark, that I've always said to my listeners, and in talking about subjects like this, we can talk about world leaders, right? We can talk about a president, a prime minister of the UK, a president of Russia, chairman of the Communist Party in China. But you know, Mark, honestly, I don't think there's any position in the world, and I wonder if this crossed your mind, where there's a single human being, any pope, any pontiff, has more influence over more people. When you think of the Christians and Catholics in the world, and you got to meet with somebody whose words hundreds of millions of people hang on, to me, that's kind of, you know, that's pretty profound. I don't know if you felt that way, but I've always thought about that.
Yeah, no, it's funny you mentioned that. My student that I went with and a few others that I met there, we were talking about that and how meeting the Pope was it wasn't like meeting just any other like mm-hmm. leader because of the influence and impact and what Pope Francis represents and the message that he gives and the love and light he spreads. It's beautiful, and it was transformative, honestly.
Wow. Wow. Any pictures? Did you get any pictures? He didn't sign anything, did he? Did you get any pictures with him or any mementos or anything like that?
Yeah, we did get some pictures with him.
Nice.
And then we got other pictures in the Vatican. And then later in the week, we did go back to hear his sermon on Sunday. And so, yep, lots of pictures. And yeah.
And finally, how does he look? You know, he's been having some health problems. I guess he bumped his chin the other day. Now, when you saw him, he was, what, 87 or 88? How does he look close? Because, you know, even he admits, kind of with a joke sometimes, he doesn't have too long left. So how did he look to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you could tell he was more frail with how when he was walking into our room.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I think that surprised me a little bit is he has this childlike like innocence and light and aura about him that is just like beautiful. So he, the way he like smiles and the way his eyes, the light his eyes give, like, and so he, though he was a little more frail when he entered the room, his energy and his aura was anything but.
And he speaks numerous languages, doesn't he? I mean, I know he's a lot of popes do that, but he speaks like five or six languages, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does.
Interesting. Oh, great stuff. And that's got to be a lifetime memory. Dr. Mark Congdon, Sacred Heart University Assistant Prof of Communication Studies. Mark, great to have you on. I'm sure you have the pictures around. And don't hesitate in the future to give me a call if there's anything you'd like to talk about. Take care.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate it. How about that? Meeting a pope.